Thank you, Lynn, and welcome, everyone. A big welcome to our members, our friends, and our guests. And thank you for being present, for being here. And you are here. You are the here-ness. As a means of deeper investigation, you can inquire directly within yourself. Ask yourself this question. What is here? Take a moment to just be still, to be here, regardless of what is passing through you. Recognize that you are the here-ness, that all is passing through. All the changes and sights and sounds and smells and emotions, all the thoughts, information, events, births and deaths, all are passing through this ever-present stillness that is here, now, in the core of your being. Well, now let's take a few moments and greet each other as we join together in our online sanctuary for our weekly assembly. In this meeting, we have a musical celebration, interaction, teaching, silence, and contemplation. As we meet and greet each other in the room, we use the PalTalk message board to type in greetings or salutations or comments about our location or where we're seeing, what we're seeing and feeling. This musical celebration has been played as our opening a few times, and it was suggested by one of our members that it should be our opening anthem, a theme song, so to speak, so because it describes so well who we are. Love is Who We Are by Laurel Eden. I love you. Yes, love is who we are. At this time, we always give a brief explanation of the purpose of awakening together. I believe Barb DeWater is our administrator today, and Barb D. will post a link to our website where you may access our purpose and values. We are an assembly of equals, joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self. Within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols, we seek to discern one truth and to rest in its embrace. And you may read more about our purpose and values at our website at the link that Barb posted. And for those listening in on the radio, it's www.awakening-together.org, and then look under About Us and Purpose and Values. Awakening Together is an online universal assembly of peers. We are dedicated to recognizing and embracing universal wisdom, and we strive to free ourselves from personal beliefs and biases and be open to the continuous flow of universal wisdom. We have five basic core values, and we use that kind of as our creed. I'll give an abbreviated form of each of the core values, but you may want to read the complete statement on our website. Very briefly, they are as follows. We trust a unique inner guidance leading us to awaken to our one true self. We realize we are all equal, with no one having authority over the spiritual intuition of others. We accept one changeless, non-dual presence of being as our true self. We affirm one true self as the only truth without idolizing any spiritual doctrine. We accept all forms as temporary appearances while we reflect on changeless truth. As we get started today, I have a couple of announcements. Each month, we have a monthly member meeting, and this is a time when upcoming plans and events of the Awakening Together organization are discussed. And next Sunday, February 2nd, our regular monthly meeting will take place. We meet right here in the Awakening Together Sanctuary in Paltalk from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's immediately following Regina's teaching from the teachings of the Inner Ramana. Also, the week-long retreat in Costa Rica is coming up in the second week of March. And you may get more information about this contemplative retreat on our website under the Events tab. Now is the time for our opening song, and I've selected a piece from the album Blue Dream. This is a time to just quiet the mind and put away the cares of the day and to be here. The song is Moving On by Fiona Joy Hawkins. Thank you. Now is the time in our gathering schedule for our invocation. That's when the presiding minister leads the congregation in an opening prayer or a guided meditation or an interval of reverential silence. I like to do a kind of a meditation, so let us prepare our hearts and our minds for our invocation. While the music plays in the background, breathe in a deep breath and then slowly breathe it out. Mindfulness is a way to quiet the mind. By quieting the mind, you clear the channel for intuition to be noticed. We quiet our minds and become very still. Jesus reminded us that the only meaningful prayer is one of gratitude. And so we give thanks. Thanks for the gift of life. Thanks for the joy of freedom. Thanks for loving relationships and for the spirit of friendship. We lay aside all thoughts of what we are and what God is, all concepts that we've learned about the world, all images that we hold about ourselves. We empty our mind of everything it thinks is either true or false, or good or bad, of every thought it judges worthy, and of all the ideas of which it is ashamed. We hold on to nothing. We do not bring with us one thought of the past. Nor one belief we have ever learned before from anything. We forget this world. We forget this course. And we come with wholly empty hands unto our God. And so it is. Amen. Our reading today is from Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Wherever You Go, There You Are. Judy Frisk, my wife, will be reading from the chapter, What is Mindfulness?
What is mindfulness? Mindfulness is an ancient Buddhist practice which has profound relevance for our present-day lives. The relevance has nothing to do with Buddhism per se, or with becoming a Buddhist, but it has everything to do with waking up and living in harmony with oneself and with the world. It has to do with examining who we are, with questioning our view of the world and our place in it, and with cultivating some appreciation for the fullness of each moment we are alive. Most of all, it has to do with being in touch. Mindfulness has been called the heart of Buddhist meditation. Fundamentally, mindfulness is a simple concept. Its power lies in its practice and its applications. Mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally. This kind of attention nurtures greater awareness, clarity, and acceptance of present moment reality. It wakes us up to the fact that our lives unfold only in moments. If we are not fully present for many of those moments, we may not only miss what is most valuable in our lives, but also fail to realize the richness and depth of our possibilities for growth and transformation. A diminished awareness of the present moment inevitably creates other problems for us as well, through our unconscious and automatic actions and behaviors, often driven by deep-seated fears and insecurities. These problems tend to build over time if they are not attended to, and can eventually leave us feeling stuck and out of touch. Over time, we may lose confidence in our ability to redirect our energies in ways that would lead to greater satisfaction and happiness, perhaps even to greater health. Mindfulness provides a simple but powerful route for getting ourselves unstuck, back into touch with our own wisdom and vitality. It is a way to take charge of the direction and quality of our own lives, including our relationships within family, our relationship to work, and to the larger world and planet, and most fundamentally, our relationship with ourselves as a person. The key to this path, which lies at the root of Buddhism, Taoism, and yoga, and which we also find in the works of people like Emerson, Thoreau, and Whitman, and in Native American wisdom, is an appreciation for the present moment. It is the direct opposite of taking life for granted. When we commit ourselves to paying attention in an open way, without falling prey to our own likes and dislikes, opinions and prejudices, projections and expectations, new possibilities open up, and we have a chance to free ourselves from the straitjacket of unconsciousness. I like to think of mindfulness simply as the art of conscious living. You don't have to be a Buddhist or yogi to practice it. In fact, if you know anything about Buddhism, you will know that the most important point is to be yourself and not try to become anything that you are not already. Buddhism is fundamentally about being in touch with your own deepest nature and letting it flow out of you unimpeded. It has to do with waking up and seeing things as they are. In fact, the word Buddha simply means one who has awakened to his or her own true nature. So, mindfulness will not conflict with any beliefs or traditions, religious or for that matter scientific, nor is it trying to sell you anything, especially not a new belief system or ideology. It is simply a practical way to be more in touch with the fullness of your being through a systematic process of self-observation, self-inquiry, and mindful action. There is nothing cold, analytical, or unfeeling about it. The overall tenor of mindfulness practice is gentle, appreciative, and nurturing. Another way to think of it would be heartfulness.
Thank you, Judy, for reading from Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Wherever You Go, There You Are, and the topic, What is Mindfulness? So my theme for today is mindfulness. The Buddha said, a mind which is not protected by mindfulness is as helpless as a blind man walking over uneven ground without a guide. Loss of mindfulness is why people engage in useless pursuits, do not take care of their own interests, and remain unalarmed in the presence of things which actually menace their welfare. From Dr. David R. Hawkins, we read, what does mindfulness mean? It means that at all times there is some aspect that is self-reflective and watching yourself and mindful so you know when you're off course. In healthy, holy relationship, members of that relationship regularly practice mindfulness with one another. In Miracles, in the text, chapter 22, it says, "This is the function of your holy relationship. For what one thinks, the other will experience with him. What can this mean except your mind and your brother's are one? Look not with fear upon this happy fact, and think not that it lays a heavy burden on you. For when you have accepted it with gladness, you will really realize your relationship is a reflection of the union of the Creator and His Son. From loving minds, there is no separation. And every thought in one brings gladness to the other because they are the same. Joy is unlimited because each shining thought of love extends its being and creates more of itself. There is no difference anywhere in it, for every thought is like itself." To quote Gandhi, our greatness lies not so much in being able to remake the world as being able to remake ourselves. And that is the theme of the book, Evolve Your Brain. The days of believing that our brains are somehow hardwired and that we can't change are over. Dr. Joe Dispenza, who appeared in What the Bleep Do We Know, has conducted research on the human mind for the past few decades. He suffered a tragic accident as a young adult, and the doctors said that there was almost no chance to survive without an operation. But he refused to get surgery and started implementing a mind technique that helped him recover from total body paralysis in just 6 months. There was no miracle. This was just the science of the mind. Joe Dispenza says, "I live my life, in a sense, all day long, thinking about being a genius or thinking about the glory and the power of God, or thinking about unconditional love." Dr. Joe focuses on how changing the way we think modifies our bodies at cellular level. He says that the mind is in direct connection with all the cells of our body, so you should be careful at what you are thinking, because there is only a matter of time until it becomes your reality. Recently, I've been rereading some of the great books that have had big impacts on my own personal journey. And one of these books is Evolve Your Brain by the neuroscientist Joe Dispenza. He reveals that some of the latest discoveries in neuroscience and psychology that prove your brain and the factors that make up who you are malleable, plastic, and can change. You might ask, "But if that's true, why am I having such a hard time changing my life and changing my behaviors?" The key reason needs a little explanation and look into how our thoughts and our brain work. They work together to create our experience of the world. You see, a thought is not only a thought. Your every thought produces a biochemical reaction in the brain. The brain then goes on to send chemical signals throughout your body as messengers of that thought. In other words, thoughts are things. Every thought you have is shaping your brain. What we repeatedly think about and where we shine the light of our focus and attention is what neurologically we become. And with enough repetition of thought and feeling, your thoughts become tattooed into the wrinkled fabric of your brain, which then go on to shape your reality, your daily habits, and your tendencies. Not only that, but your thoughts add to the quantum field, since we are all one. There's good news to all of this. Neuroscience has shown that we can mold and shape the neurological framework of the self by what we repeatedly give our attention to. In other words, in the same way that we may be unconsciously creating ourselves in our lives, we can consciously recreate a magnificent life and literally reinvent ourselves through mindfulness. Thich Nhat Hanh said, "Practicing mindfulness enables us to become a real person. When we are real people, we see real people around us. And life is present in all its richness. The most precious gift we can offer others is our presence. When our mindfulness embraces those we love, they will bloom like flowers." And from his book, Living Buddha, Living Christ, Thich Nhat Hanh said, "Mindfulness is to be aware of everything you do every day. Mindfulness is a kind of light that shines upon all your thoughts, all your feelings, all your actions, and all your words. Mindfulness is the Buddha. Mindfulness is the equivalent of the Holy Spirit, the energy of God." But there is one big obstacle to changing your life. And you've most likely run into this obstacle over and over again, and maybe not even consciously knowing this is the obstacle you keep running into. According to Joe Dispenza's research, we don't change our circumstances because we have become addicted to the emotional state they produce and the chemicals that arouse that state of being. We literally become addicted to ourselves, to our routines, to our ways of thinking, feeling, and behaving. Even when we know it, it may not be one of our best, in our best interest. Even when we know that it's not helping us. Just like someone who is addicted to heroin, we have got to get our fix of sadness, worry, shame, fear, and so on. Every thought creates chemistry in your body. And we know that enough of any substance that alters your state of mind can become addicting. Our bodies follow our brain. Our bodies go on to create more cell receptor sites that mirrors our habitual thoughts and feelings to the point where we literally have an addiction to our habitual thoughts and feelings. Consider, we have been calculated to have up to 60,000 thoughts in one day. In one day. And 95 to 98% of the thoughts we think today are the exact same as yesterday. But you know what? Even then, we can change. We can recreate ourselves. We can transform our mental, emotional tendencies and therefore transform our whole experience of life. As Joe Dispenza puts it, to change is to be greater than the environment. And I'm here to remind you, you are greater than any and all circumstances you may find yourself in today. It doesn't matter if you're constantly depressed, if you have decades of negative self-talk and a negative self-image. You can turn your life around, and you can start today, right now. What thoughts and feelings do you find yourself repeating? Napoleon Hill said a few decades ago, "Whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve. How right he was. In his book, Seeing, Knowing, Being, A Guide to Sacred Awakenings, author John Greer says, we are likely to identify ourselves with our thinking. What we think becomes what we are. That is why we guard our ideas, opinions, and beliefs so tenaciously and so jealously. We take them for the very core of our being. The mystical adventure is in all of the seeing. From departure to arrival, nothing changes but our eyes. Serious seekers come to realize that this is our way of seeing the world that has caused our suffering and not the world itself. This realization is reflected in a theme that appears over and over again in the mythology and sacred writings of humanity. Through years of conditioning, we learn to see ourselves as separate and alone in a world of endless divisions, and this delusion of self brings suffering and meaninglessness so characteristic of the human condition. Buddhist wisdom tells us, in the beginning, mindfulness takes away worries and fears about past and future and keeps us anchored in the present. In the end, it points to right view of the self. Mindfulness is not just a word or a discourse by the Buddha, but a meaningful state of mind. It means we have to be here now, in this very moment, and we have to know what is happening internally and externally. It means being alert to our motives and learning to change unwholesome thoughts and emotions into wholesome ones. Mindfulness is a mental activity that in due course eliminates all suffering. Unless we have the determination to increase our mindfulness from moment to moment, we will easily forget to practice it. In 1979, John Kabat-Zinn recruited chronically ill patients that were not responding well to traditional treatments to participate in his newly formed 8-week stress reduction program. Everybody can relate to stress. It's a common experience. We find out more every day about the negative effects of stress on the body, on the immune system, on aging, and so on. And likewise, there's a corresponding strong interest in how we can develop resiliency in the face of stress, which is a benefit of mindfulness practice. Joe Dispenza says, someone's got to start telling the truth, that the number one reason for people living in physical imbalance is because of the hormones of stress. 75% to 90% of every person that walks into a healthcare facility is walking in because of a stress-related disorder. The longer we live by stress, the more this disease will persist. And I don't care what drug, what surgery you do, you got to take care of the cause of that problem. He said, you know, when Jesus healed his people, he said, go and sin no more. What he meant was, you change your attitude, because I got a busy day today. I got a crucifixion coming up. I got a mother who's worried about me. I got 12 guys who have no idea what I'm talking about. And if you don't change your attitude, I'm going to have to come back and do this all over again. So I think people have to realize we're the cause of all of this and start taking our power back. Instead of believing that everybody has the answers, start finding out for yourself the truth behind it and start making your own personal choices. Spend a little bit of time doing that and you will see the effects of that. Start being the scientist in your life and never wait for science to give you permission to do the uncommon. Do the uncommon and do it consistently and have the scientists come to you and measure you and say, wow, we have to change our laws. Jon Kabat-Zinn goes on to say, mindfulness is not about attaining benefits or fixing problems. It's about discovering there is more right with this than wrong with this. Almost everything we do for a purpose, to get something or somewhere. There are tremendous benefits that arise from mindfulness practice. It works precisely because we don't try to attain benefit. Instead, we befriend ourselves as we are. We learn how to drop in ourselves and visit and hang out in awareness. In meditation, this attitude can be a real obstacle. That is because meditation is different from all other human activities. Although it takes a lot of work and energy of a certain kind, ultimately meditation is a non-doing. It has no goal other than for yourself to be yourself. The irony is that you already are. This sounds paradoxical and a little crazy, yet this paradox and craziness may be pointing you toward a new way of seeing yourself, one in which you are trying less and having and being more. This comes from intentionally cultivating the attitude of non-striving. For example, if you sit down to meditate and you think, I'm going to be relaxed, or get enlightened, or control my pain, or become a better person, then you have introduced an idea into your mind of where you should be, and along with it comes the notion that you're not okay right now. If only I were calmer, or more intelligent, or a harder worker, or more of this, or more of that. If only my heart were healthier, or my knee were better, then I would be okay. But right now, I'm not okay. This attitude undermines the cultivation of mindfulness, which involves simply paying attention to whatever is happening. If you are tense, then just pay attention to the tension. If you are in pain, then be with that pain as best you can. If you are criticizing yourself, then observe the activity of the judging mind. Just watch. We are simply allowing anything and everything that we experience from moment to moment to be here, because it already is. A Buddhist monk that wrote Mindfulness in Plain English said, don't cling to anything and don't reject anything. Let come what comes and accommodate yourself to that, whatever it is. If good mental images arise, that's fine. If bad mental images arise, well, that's fine too. Look on all of it as equal and make yourself comfortable with whatever happens. Don't fight with what you experience. Just observe it all mindfully. The great philosopher Heraclitus declared, you cannot step into the same river twice, for fresh waters are ever flowing in. Deepak Chopra says, The same is true of the body. If you pinch an inch around your waist, the fat you are squeezing between your fingers is not the same as it was last month. Your fat cells fill up with fat and empty out constantly, so that all of it is exchanged every 3 weeks. You acquire a new stomach lining every 5 days. Your skin is new every 5 weeks. Your skeleton, seemingly so solid and rigid, is entirely new every 3 months. The flow of oxygen and carbon and hydrogen and nitrogen is so rapid that you could be renewed in a matter of weeks. You appear to be the same outwardly, and yet you are like a building whose bricks are constantly being replaced by new ones. Every year, fully 98% of the total number of atoms in your body are replaced. This has been confirmed by radioisotope studies at the Oak Ridge Laboratories in California. This constant stream of change is controlled at the quantum level of the mind-body system, and yet medicine has not taken advantage of this fact. It is still waiting to take the quantum leap. To change the printout of the body, you must learn to rewrite the software of the mind. At the turn of the century, psychologist William James hinted at the mechanism that allows us to reinvent ourselves. He said, "One of the greatest discoveries of my generation was that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind." The Course speaks often about our invulnerability now and how it is that nothing can happen to us by chance or accident. In the text, chapter 21, we read, "It is impossible the Son of God be merely driven by events outside of him. It is impossible that happenings that come to him were not his choice. His power of decision is the determiner of every situation in which he seems to find himself by chance or accident. No accident or chance is possible within the universe of God as God created it, outside of which is nothing. Suffer, and you decided sin was your goal. Be happy, and you gave the power of decision to him who must decide for God for you. This is the little gift you offer to the Holy Spirit, and even this he gives to you to give yourself. For by this gift is given you the power to release your Savior, that he may give you salvation." The screen which mind created and onto which it chose to project its illusions is consciousness itself. And the images which it projected are none other than thoughts which dwell in that consciousness. So, as Judy read from Jon Kabat-Zinn, mindfulness is simply a practical way to be more in touch with the fullness of your being through the systematic process of self-observation, self-inquiry, and mindful action. There is nothing cold, analytical, or unfeeling about it. The overall tenor of mindfulness, of the mindfulness practice, is gentle, appreciative, and nurturing. Another way to think about it would be heartfulness. So, this is a time for our open meditation or contemplation. And it's also the time that we invite you to give a donation if you choose. And Barb D. will post a link where you may, if you like, make a donation to Awakening Together. And we acknowledge that all giving comes from the hearts of our members and friends. And we deeply appreciate all of your gifts and offerings. And we thank you. now we have about 15 minutes for sharing, and I invite you to share your thoughts, any thoughts or feelings that you have, maybe based on today's teaching of mindfulness. So just raise your hand, and I will pass the mic over to you. Okay, Regina, thank you. Here you go with the mic. Well, as soon as I can figure out how to...
Hello. Happy Sunday, everyone. I really enjoyed your talk again today, Phil. And, mindfulness is something that I'm very mindful of. And part of the reason is because of the Minister Preparation Program. You know, I'm writing these workbooks to go along with the books that we are studying in that program. And, the first one was Adya Shanti, which is what I think you taught from last time, I think it was last time. Adya Shanti, True Meditation, letting everything be as it is in a very deep way. Then it was the Bhagavad Gita, which, as far as I could tell, is really focusing on even-mindedness above all else. And then the Tao Te Ching, which, as far as I can tell, is the combination of letting everything be as it is and even-mindedness above all else and remaining centered. You know, the same topic again. And I'm now writing the Buddhist course, and of course it's mindfulness. And, you know, if I was to say the one thing that is consistent as I look at these different spiritual paths, and I am looking at these paths primarily for the first time. I've looked at the Bhagavad Gita a little bit. I read a couple chapters in it. I looked at the Tao Te Ching somewhat a long time ago, but this is my first time doing, you know, somewhat of an in-depth study. You could obviously go deeper into any of these, but the thing that I'm finding that is absolutely consistent is what the Buddhists would call mindfulness. But it's that not only being aware, but also allowing everything to be as it is. I call it, what's been coming to me is that it's transcendence. It's transcendence of the idea good and bad, right and wrong, should be, shouldn't be. I mean, it feels like an absolute standing in the space in the middle of everything and letting the entire world spin in whatever way it's going to spin without it asking anything of it. Without asking anything at all, and just being absolutely present. And, another thing that has happened is another book that I've read, I haven't started writing the workbook that goes with it yet, but another book that I've read that's a part of the Minister Program is The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. And some of you know, because I've talked about it, one of the chapters that really affected me was near the back. Lynn read it last time I taught. It was the chapter on unconditional happiness. And I took a vow of unconditional happiness on the Friday before Christmas. And, it's just the most magnificent spiritual practice of all, just choosing to stand in that center, in that eye of the hurricane, where everything is allowed to be exactly as it is. I ask nothing at all from the world, and I stand there in complete unconditional peace and happiness and joy. And there have been a few challenges I mentioned in my teaching last time, a few challenges that arose. I mentioned one thing that had happened was for the first time ever there was a blow up in this house. It's honestly never occurred where both Danielle and Jasmine were very upset with the decision I made. And, you know, that was a bit of a challenge because it was completely new and different than the environment of this household normally. And, I found that I could still keep I could still stay in that eye of the storm, but in that case, it took a little bit of focus. It took a little bit of focus to set down and to remain committed to my vow and to choose to remain still and to let the storm, you know, whirlwind around me. But within about 2 hours, as I mentioned in the training or in the teaching last time, you know, both girls came back and well, without guilt, apologized, you know, but they kind of saw where, you know, where their thinking was maybe off, and they both apologized, and, you know, I think we went out to lunch or something, and the whole thing was over. So it didn't last long. But the point is, what I'm finding is it seems like the only thing that I'm practicing now, you know, I've had a lot of different spiritual practices over the years, but the only thing I'm practicing now is what you were calling mindfulness. Now, I did have an accident yesterday, which I think probably some of you are aware of, and for some reason, and I can't say why, this accident has not been challenging. This accident, every experience that has happened, has been the standing in the eye of the storm, it has been completely, completely natural from the very, very beginning. So this is actually a very easy experience for me. But it's that standing in the center, that staying in the space, that staying still, that not swinging with emotions and with events, that mindfulness, that non-judgmental attention, that not asking anything from the universe, that just being present. And then, of course, that when we do that, we are moved. You know, even though we're talking about standing still, we stand still, but then the universe moves us. So there's a moving that happens. But it was just really nice to hear you talk about it, because that's about all I'm doing nowadays. And with that said, I'm going to release the mic and let my dog out, because that's what she wants right now. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Regina. And we hope that you recover rapidly from your accident. So does anybody else have any thoughts or things that they would like to share? Just raise your hand, and we'll give you the mic, and you can share. You know, Joe Dispenza talked a lot about your brain. His emphasis is on the brain, because he is a doctor that has spent a lot of time studying the brain. But I want to remind you that your brain is not your mind. You know, the neurons in your brain that fire together and wire together. And by that process, you can train your brain to make habits, and by doing an action or a thought over and over and over, your brain can actually train your body to do various things. That's how athletes get good at what they do, by practicing and doing things over and over and over. And that's how we get good at what we do in mindfulness, is by thinking good thoughts over and over and over. So your mind produces your thoughts, and the thoughts you think are not your real thoughts. Your mind produces two kinds of thoughts, ego thoughts and thoughts from the Holy Spirit. And you have a choice of which thoughts to listen to. So you can choose to listen to that still small voice of the Holy Spirit and train your mind to just listen to those thoughts and practice those in order to attain more and more mindfulness. So anyone else have any thoughts about mindfulness or about anything that you'd like to share with the group today? So I ran across a little poem, a poem by Derek Walcott. He was a St. Lucian poet, and he received the 1992 Nobel Prize in Literature. He usually wrote very long poems, but here's a short one entitled Love After Love. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door. In your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image away from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. And that's a real short poem by Derek Walcott. Well, if there are no more comments or wishes to share, I'll go ahead and play our final song for today. The final song is done by the Swindle Singers, and it's called Blackbird.
Thank you.
So thank you all for your attendance today. Thanks to our reading assistant, Judy Frisk, and to our administrator, Barbara DeWater. And please stay if you can and join us for an hour of fellowship immediately following, right here in this room. So now I will turn the mic over to you, Lynn.